The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
You are tuned to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Every day, listen for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at advanced medical testing centers. Tune in. Get healthy. Now, here are your hosts for the hour, Dr. Herb Slavin, MD, and Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome once again to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli, and I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin. And we have very, very special guest today from Cleveland Heart Lab. Joining us today will be Jake Orville. He is the CEO of Cleveland Heart Lab. And Dr. Mark Penn, he is the CMO of Cleveland Heart Lab. Both are founders of the company. Dr. Penn is a cardiologist and director of research and director of cardiovascular medicine fellowship at the Summa Cardiovascular Institute and professor of medicine and integrative medical services at Northeast Ohio Medical University, where he leads the Skirball Laboratory for Cardiovascular Cellular Therapeutics. And if you don't think my tongue is getting twisted this morning, you're wrong. And he is board certified in internal medicine, cardiovascular medicine. So the intro goes on, and we'll get to more of the intro after I say good morning to Dr. Slavin. Hi, Dr. Slavin.
Good morning, Jen.
We are going to have such an incredibly important show this morning. The kind of information that our listeners need with regard to supporting the health of their heart and circulatory system. Dr. Slavin?
Okay. As you know, Advanced Medical Testing Centers is our sponsor. And Cleveland Heart Lab is one of the many labs that they send testing to, specialized testing, that you can't get in other places. And I think the way I want to start off today's discussion, and I'm going to make a wild guess, that most doctors, when they evaluate their patients in the context of cardiovascular disease, are probably only testing cholesterol levels.
How heartbreaking, no pun intended, is that?
I mean, I could be wrong. And, of course, they want to change that. So I'm going to start off asking Dr. Penn, why did we need another test besides cholesterol for cardiovascular disease?
Good morning. And thanks for the opportunity to be with you this morning. The reason is due to our great successes, actually, in treating and lowering cholesterol levels. The reality is, in the late 70s, gentleman Dr. Russell Ross out of Seattle came up with the response to injury hypothesis of atherosclerosis. And what Dr. Ross said was it was kind of a two-hit phenomenon. One is that the artery wall became injured, and the other is that injury led to an ongoing process. The injury, what we've learned, is really oxidation and oxidized cholesterol-based. And the response is inflammation. We have, as a field, really focused on the cholesterol or the injury side of the problem for really the last 35 to 40 years. And we've had tremendous success at that. And it's the reason why fewer patients die of heart disease and heart attacks are smaller and people are living longer. However, now we're at a point where 50% or greater of the patients who have heart attacks actually have controlled cholesterol levels. So the question is, how do we advance testing to identify the patients who still have residual risk despite having their cholesterol or their LDL cholesterol treated? And the reality is that's inflammation-based. So, we'll remember the days when we had our patients in our clinic and, Mrs. Smith had an LDL cholesterol of 90, we'd put our arm around her and say, good news, you know, you're low risk in my practice. Reality is everyone's at 90 now that needs to be. And then the question is, how do we figure out who's really still has residual risk? And inflammation testing is a very reasonable, scientifically based, and clinically approachable strategy for that.
So if I so to summarize what you just said, that despite getting, let's assume everybody's cholesterol under control, now, and there's two ways to get it under control, by the way. You could have normal cholesterols because you're eating healthy and you're exercising, you're doing all the right things for your body, or you could be taking drugs and get the cholesterol levels down. And I'm not sure those two groups are equal, by the way. They call those surrogate endpoints, and I'm not sure they're equal, but be that as it may, you've got everybody's cholesterol across the board in the acceptable range, but we're still finding people dying of heart disease. So it can't be just cholesterol alone. And that was the reason for looking for other explanations why exactly. People still have heart issues despite controlling cholesterol. So how did this research go about when you to come up with these other risk markers for cardiovascular disease?
Sure. So it started in the 80s and 90s at animal bench work, identifying markers of inflammation or key inflammatory pathways that were involved in the development of atherosclerosis or hardening of the arteries. And then it turned in the late 90s, early 2000s, to identifying what blood markers exist or urine markers that are stable, measurable, meaningful, and some early clinical trials that demonstrated that some of the testing we use actually do predict or an increased risk of heart disease and death in patients.
Now, you mentioned statin drugs for lowering cholesterol levels. Statin drugs have also been mentioned as good anti-inflammatories. Mm-hmm. But apparently they're missing out on some areas because people are taking statin drugs, they're lowering cholesterol. I'm assuming they're getting the anti-inflammatory effect at the same time, and yet they're still having problems. So what's missing?
So what's missing is, and you're right, statins are very good anti-inflammatory drugs. It's one of the reasons why, even with the newer cholesterol-lowering medicines like the PCSK9 inhibitors, patients should still be on statin first. But the reality is there are ongoing drivers of inflammation, particularly in this day and age, diabetes, that while statins are good anti-inflammatories, they're not enough to inhibit the vascular disease that occurs. Gum disease, mouth disease, inflammatory bowel disease, diabetes being the number one, will all drive vascular inflammation and overwhelm the effects that statin therapy has.
So what you're saying is sugar and carbohydrates need to be paid attention to.
Absolutely.
We say on the show that, people worry about so many causes of disease and death, and yet there is no warning label on sugar when it's probably the biggest killer out there.
So, yeah, we have the Surgeon General's warning on cigarette packages, but none on the soda and none on the diet soda. So people think they're home free. They're not taking sugar into their bodies, but still the inflammation continues.
So, all right, this is a rhetorical question. wouldn't it make more sense to remove the underlying cause of the inflammation as opposed to trying to find a drug to treat the inflammation once it's there?
Rhetorical. Yeah. Of course it is. And look, a lot of people in the early 2000s, late 1990s with the AHA diet. And, the first statin trial was released in 1994 called the 4S trial that really showed lowering cholesterol worked. That led to changes in dietary guidelines by the late 90s. And the message that was given was, no fat, no cholesterol. However, no message of moderating how much you ate and staying away from sugars got out there. And so people replaced fat with sugar. And, 15 years later, we're overweight and diabetic. And I think, you know, there's a reasonable correlation to that. It's all about education. Education can make a difference. We got rid of cholesterol and fat in our diet. We really need to get rid of sugar. We need to exercise more, and we need to balance our diets.
Now, we're going to talk about shortly about some of the new tests available to identify whose bodies are inflamed, because you can have this inflammation and have no symptoms at all. But they haven't come up with drugs yet, right, to treat this type of inflammation.
Correct. So, you know, statins are probably the best drug we have. Removing the offending agent, be it an inflamed mouth, getting your gingivitis treated, getting your rheumatoid arthritis under control, is clearly the better way. There have been strategies used to try and target some of these enzymes that are marking inflammation, like LPPLA2. There was a direct inhibitor that failed to show clinical benefit. And, you know, one of the messages we've been very clear about at Cleveland Heart Lab is while the elevation of these enzymes like LPPLA2 or myeloperoxidase mark patients who have vulnerable plaque and vascular inflammation, we do not claim that those enzymes are part of the disease, but their elevation marks the disease very well.
Might trace mineral deficiencies, the very, very minerals supporting connective tissue, be of importance in this discussion?
Yeah, so clearly imbalance of trace minerals and vitamins in the body can stress the body, lead to inflammation. And that's certainly part of the story, probably relative to the diabetic burden in this country, a minor part of the story. But clearly, patients who don't eat right and don't take care of themselves is a problem. You know, there are a lot of folks out there who do triathlons and, you know, are extreme athletes. And certainly I look at them impressed that they can do those types of things. But, you know, what we need to recognize is the literature tells us those people do not have a survival advantage. They actually have the same lifespan as people who don't do that. And we've had the opportunity.
For which I am very grateful.
Otherwise, we'd all be running triathlons. Right. We've had the opportunity to study extreme athletes. And it's been interesting. They're often dehydrated. They often have challenges to their kidneys due to the protein that they're burning. And some of our tests, an F2 isoprostane, which is a general marker of oxidation, have been used by some as tools to train and to optimize their food intake relative to their energy expenditure so that they're not ultimately burning themselves and their muscle, but they're trying to burn the fuel that they take in orally.
A little bit of music in that background, and that means it's time for us to take a short break here on Natural Doc Radio. Stay tuned. More to come.
Did you know that you can be eating a healthy diet, but that your body may not be absorbing the vitamins and nutrients from your foods? Advanced Medical Testing Centers is a premier blood draw center servicing Genova Diagnostics Lab. Genova offers an advanced comprehensive blood test that identifies your body's deficiencies in absorbing vitamins, nutrients, and essential cofactors. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is located at 7200 West Commercial Boulevard in Lauderhill. They offer an on-time appointment guarantee and the lowest price guarantee. Schedule your appointment today for a blood draw for the Genova Diagnostics Nutritional Evaluation Test. Call Advanced Medical Testing Centers at 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332. Or visit us at amtcenters.com.
Are you looking for expert advice on how to improve your health, but want to do it from the comfort of your home? Now you can conveniently schedule remote consultations with Janet Cimarelli at janetcimarelli.com. Janet is a licensed nutrition counselor specializing in the field of natural foods and supplements. Janet offers consultations via telephone, Skype, or email with convenient and flexible times to meet the needs of your busy life. Janet will educate you on how to manage your diet and lifestyle to overcome illness. Her areas of expertise include allergies, diabetes, heart disease, hormone replacement, weight management, insomnia, and healthy aging. Don't wait. Schedule your appointment with Janet, and she'll guide you to change your diet and change your life. Take control of your health at JanetCimarelli.com. And tune in to hear Janet on Natural Doc Radio, Monday through Friday, 10 to 11 a.m., right here on AM 1470 WNN.
Welcome back. You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli here with Dr. Herb Slavin and Dr. Mark Penn, and we are talking about the research and information available from Cleveland Heart Lab. Dr. Slavin?
I just want to say, when you announced him, you said he was a CMO. Yes. I'm not sure many of our listeners even know what a CMO. We know what CEO is.
Right. I had to stop and okay, yeah, now I get it. Chief Medical Officer.
Right, of the Cleveland Heart Lab.
Right.
And we're going to talk about some of the specialized tests that they've come up with, because there was a void there, as we talked about earlier in the program. Everybody's gotten their cholesterols under control. And, you know, I ask patients, by the way, why are you taking that statin drug? And they tell me, of course, I want to lower my cholesterol. I said, why do you want to lower your cholesterol? That stumps them. You know, they don't.
Because my doctor said so.
Well, they haven't, you know, put two and two together. Well, they're taking cholesterol drugs because they were hoping it would reduce their risk of having a heart attack or heart disease. And it probably does to some extent. However, they said, you know, if you reduce, statin drugs have reduced maybe the death rate from cardiovascular disease, but it didn't make a change in overall death rates. Why would that be?
Well, the reality is our risks have gone up over the same time we've had statins, right? So as we talked about, first statin trial was out in 94. The dietary guidelines changed in the end of the 90s. That led to a huge influx of sugars and larger portion sizes because we weren't eating fat, so we could eat anything we wanted. Led to a tremendous obesity and diabetes burden that this country is now facing. So the risk actually is much higher. And, you know, in 2000, the American Heart Association set out to lower death and MI rates by 10%, maybe 20% over 10 years. And I was the local president of the American Heart Association in Cleveland in the mid-2000s. And we got a notice that said we've achieved that goal in 7 years, not 10. I sat there thinking about it. So let's see, we're fatter, we're diabetic, and we don't exercise much, and yet our death
we
rates
reached our goal.
Yeah, and yet our death rates have gone down. So why is that? Right, it is the lowering of cholesterol levels in statin therapy, antiplatelet therapy with aspirin and dual platelet inhibition. But the reality is, we're doing that at a time when our risks went much higher. So the total overall rate hasn't gone down. Because frankly, the stuff we're talking about now really has to be readdressed and corrected so that our dietary intake is.
Now, I don't want to get sidetracked too much here, but you mentioned one thing with the increased use of statin drugs, the incidence of diabetes went up, and that was a new warning that they put on the statin drugs that increases the risk of diabetes. Could there be a connection there?
There can be. You know, let's be honest, any drug that, tens of millions of people have taken, you'll find a signal for almost any side effect you want to. We'll all accept that in this day and age, aspirin wouldn't pass the FDA and be an approved therapy. So, you know, the benefit of statins outweighs the risk. I think the challenge that we have to face when we look at prevention and take that diabetes risk seriously, you know, we probably shouldn't be starting 30-year-olds on statins unless there was clear need.
Yeah. I'm starting to hear about some pediatricians putting their kids on statin drugs.
Well, what we have to recognize is, you know, these obese kids, when they sadly die of a traumatic death and you look do an autopsy, they have atheroma in their coronaries. So, you know, this is a big problem.
No, right. And so when you start to think about how we feed our kids at breakfast, what they tend to eat at school, what they get as an after school snack, it certainly isn't a deficiency of a cholesterol lowering drug, but certainly a very, very serious deficit in their diet.
So I remember when my kids were younger, the school, I think, very wisely said, we will celebrate birthdays one day a month, because otherwise they were getting cake and cookies two, three times a week.
Well, right. Janet, you brought up an interesting point. And I'm not sure what pediatricians are doing. Are they checking cholesterol and these other inflammatory markers in that age group, in the pediatric group?
Yeah, not necessarily the inflammatory markers, but, you know, the cholesterol levels in kids who are at risk, absolutely.
Although they should be checking, probably, if I had to pick one test, probably might be the fasting insulin level.
Yeah.
I think that'll be a good marker as well.
Certainly, you know, you can't discount those basics, vitamin C and vitamin D, critically important for that overall picture of inflammation.
If you were to check that, people would be low in that as well.
Right.
So so diet plays a major role. I remember there was a book written many years ago. I probably never saw it. It was called Where We Stand. And what that book was about is comparing different countries around the world with different diseases and everything. Now, the United States was interesting, you know, spends the most money on healthcare. They didn't stand at the top of the list as far as health. You know, they were dying at a younger age than a lot of other countries. So if you were to look at countries with a much lower incidence of heart disease, and specifically, have they looked at other countries as far as these inflammatory markers, which we'll get to soon, and they must have lower levels of inflammatory markers that coincide with the lower incidence of heart disease, and what would they attribute it to in those countries?
Well, so Cleveland Heart Lab started in 2009. The Western diet got to most of those countries before that. Uh-huh. So, you know, the inflammatory markers are elevated. What we do know is vegans, patients who are on strict diets, have very low inflammatory markers. And we've seen in patients, Caldwell Esselstyn's a former colleague of mine at the Cleveland Clinic who did the fork over knives, and Essie has a very interesting diet. Never eat anything that had a mother or a face, which doesn't leave a lot, but I've had the pleasure of dining with Essie, and it's actually very tasty. You know, those patients of his have very low inflammatory markers over time. So if you would have thought about, you know, sub-Saharan Africa, India before meat became a big issue, Southeast Asia before the Western diet was introduced, we would expect that those patients would have, or those populations would have had very low inflammatory markers, consistent with the fact that at that time they had very low heart disease rates. Now, China is becoming heart disease is becoming a significant problem. And when you talk about the book, Where We Stand, and you talk about the different genetics that evolved in each of these regions based on their diet, and there are a couple books about genetics and diet, they did not evolve to eat our diet. And it's a big problem. The sub-Saharan India or Southeast Asia India patients have very low HDLs, not a high LDLs, but very low HDLs, and they have a tremendous risk of cardiovascular disease.
I'm going to bring up a possibly controversial name, and so I'm thinking of two people. The first one, Dean Ornish, being very, very much in the realm of vegetarian or vegan diet, and then Dr. Atkins. So here are two ends of the spectrum, but might the outcome have some similarities?
Yeah, so I think there's a common thread through there, right? So Dr. Ornish is more vegan and not having the meat in the diet and also not much sugar. And any sugar in the vegetables are complex carbohydrates, which we do not easily digest. Dr. Atkins has pure fat in the diet, but interestingly, no sugar, which therefore doesn't trigger insulin, which therefore limits the amount of calories that the cells take up. And, you know, at Cleveland Heart Lab, at one of our annual symposiums, we had the pleasure of having Gary Taubes come and speak to us. And he made a really fascinating point. We count our calories based on what comes in our mouth and how much we expend. His argument is what we really should be doing is talking about the calories that cross into the cell through the cell membrane and how much we expend. And what regulates what gets through the cell membrane is, in fact, the amount of insulin. So if you end up eating a large caloric meal, but no insulin is induced
triggered,
because we don't have sugar in that meal, In fact, the amount of calories we actually take into the cells is very limited. So, in fact, they both end up in the same place, right? There's not a lot of calories taken up in the cell. Dean Ornish does it by limiting the amount of fat and complex carbohydrates. Atkins does it by not allowing any sugar into the body, and they end up at the same place. The cells don't take up much energy.
It's very, very interesting because one of the other names that might be a little controversial in this discussion is Dr. D'Adamo. So I talk a lot of times to people about their dietary choices based on their blood types, and the most common blood type being O, and being needful of some meat, red meat in the diet. And when people do choose from the high quality foods in the beneficial range in according to their blood type, a lot of diverse problems resolve. So very, very interesting stuff that yes, indeed, your diet does count. And I'm just very, very interested in learning some more about how the calories get into the cell. And I'm sure our listeners are paying attention to that, too.
We're coming up on a break, but I just want to set the stage for when we come back, you know, because people basically fall into two categories: those that really want to do a good job taking care of themselves, and those that don't pay any attention. But the one thing they might have in common is to get tested to see, you know, how things are working for them. And maybe for those not eating properly, if they see all those abnormalities on their lab work, that may serve as some motivation to make some changes. I'll repeat.
Well, it's a very, very good approach for those people because they can track in black and white how the changes they're making in their diets and lifestyles, right, how that makes a difference.
But the people that are doing a good job, hopefully, eating right and choosing all the right foods still need to be tested, because you never know. They may be missing out. Just one quick question before the break.
Sure.
How does stress affect inflammatory markers?
So stress directly affects inflammatory markers because it affects systemic inflammation. And I used to run the Bakken Heart Brain Institute. Earl Bakken was the founder of Medtronic and seed-funded an institute I ran. And we looked at how the brain and emotions, depression, PTSD affected heart disease. And it's quite clear that they directly induce systemic inflammation. And there's clearly an increased risk of myocardial infarctions or heart attacks.
So the point is, you can be eating all the right things and even exercising. You still need the test because maybe stress is a factor that you have to be aware of.
Well, when you consider the potential for converting certain hormones to cortisol and that whole cascade, you can see how multifactorial this entire discussion is. That music means it's time for us to take a break here on Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli. I'm here with Dr. Herb Slavin and our very special guest, Dr. Mark Penn of Cleveland Heart Lab. We will be right back after these messages.
Advanced Medical Testing Centers is proud to sponsor Natural Doc Radio, co-hosted by Dr. Herbert Slavin, MD, and Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor. We are located at 7200 West Commercial Boulevard, Suite 209 in Lauderhill, and you can find us on the web at amtcenters.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is your premier blood draw center, staffed by professionals with over 15 years' experience, clean, comfortable, and efficient. We guarantee your appointment time and guarantee the lowest price. We test for cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, and more. We draw for all specialty labs, including Access, Health Diagnostic, Singulex, Innovative, Quest, LabCorp, and others. Call us today to set up an appointment. 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332.
The Institute of Advanced Medicine brings you the latest in natural health care, reviewing the published research, attending conferences with health experts from around the world. That allows the healthcare team at the Institute of Advanced Medicine in Lauderhill to provide you the quality and experience you're searching for in a healthcare team. Testing to target your individual needs and treating with natural and holistic approaches, the goal is wellness. You can reach the Institute of Advanced Medicine easily on Commercial Boulevard just west of the Florida Turnpike or three blocks east of University Drive in Lauderhill. You can call us 954-748-4991 to learn more. 954-748-4991. And welcome back. You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Janet Cimarelli here with Dr. Herb Slavin and our special guest, Dr. Mark Penn of Cleveland Heart Lab. And we're talking about all of the things you need to know to maintain a healthy heart.
Well, Cleveland Heart Lab has come up with some additional tests to identify people at risk of developing, let's say, heart attacks. You know, that when you have the elevations of these inflammatory markers, I guess you could say they already have some degree of atherosclerosis.
Am I going to get stressed if I find that the markers on these tests are in a negative realm, thereby increasing my risks?
Well, let's put things into perspective, because mainstream medicine's approach is to do a stress test on somebody. If you pass the stress test, they say, okay, everything is good. You can go home. Without really telling the patient, by the way, you could have up to a 70% blockage and still pass the stress test. So let's compare these tests with a stress test. Someone passes the stress test, they could still have all these inflammatory markers elevated, correct?
Yeah, so the I guess the myth, you say, is the 70, 80, 90, 95% blockages are not the ones that cause heart attacks. Mm-hmm. The ones that cause heart attacks are ones that when I'm doing a catheterization or used to, I'm not even paying attention to, quite frankly. It's the 5, 10, 20% fatty, soft lesions that, forgive the analogy, like a pimple on your face can rupture. And when that rupture occurs, one of two things happens. If you're a young person, it lays down more plaque. So as we say, like the islands in the Pacific, when the volcano erupts, the island gets bigger.
So for our listeners, just to be clear on this, so when you go for bypass surgery, that's not really reducing your risk of a heart attack, because that's, you know, they're treating the plaque that doesn't rupture, because it's a mature plaque.
That's
right. Stable.
So you're treating the stable pain, right, which is 70% or greater, which is what you need to have an abnormal stress test, and what, when you're walking up the hill to the mailbox in the morning, is what gives you chest pain. Those are not the blockages that typically cause heart attacks. And in fact, it's been well studied, if you've had bypass or not, you have the same number of heart attacks in your life. The issue is you survive them better if you've had bypass.
Well, we're going to get to the actual tests we want people to be aware of. But my way of thinking is, let's say you take somebody that they skip the stress test. A lot of times, I don't know, they'll jump right to a cardiac cath. They'll see a blockage, and they'll say, oh, you should have that blockage addressed. But they're not checking for collateral circulation. And I'm just wondering, if you bypass a blockage or do angioplasty on that blockage, don't you lose all your collateral circulation that you develop? Because
So the collaterals don't regress, and collateralization is likely genetic because not all patients do it. We are now able in the cath lab to do something called fractional flow reserve, which is functionally a stress test on that lesion. And the guidelines and the literature, frankly, strongly support that if that FFR is not significant, then there's no benefit and no reason to stent that artery. So we're actually, even those, you know, patients will come in, they'll have pain. We will choose to either directly cath them or stress them. The reality is stress tests are 1 in 7 wrong. A positive 1 is 1 in 7 should be negative, and a negative 1 in 7 is positive. So if the story is good and the history and the risk factors are appropriate, and you're not going to believe a negative stress test based on the story, I don't think it's unreasonable to take people straight to the catheterization laboratory. In the lab, you can then stress that specific lesion and ask the question whether it's causative of the pain.
What about a perfusion study, perhaps, before that?
Yeah, so that would be part of the stress test, either a dobutamine echo or a nuclear perfusion scan. Functionally, this fractional flow reserve is doing a perfusion study in the cath lab using a wire down the lesion.
But a lot of times, you know, once they have you on the table, they sort of have more control over what happens.
Yeah, they do. And to address this issue, it's now required that you have peer review and all studies are reviewed. And, you know, physicians who are overusing revascularization are told such. And, you know, the system has recognized some of the excesses and are dialing it back quite significantly. But FFR has allowed us to now do this.
All right. I want to get into a couple of the new tests that are available. TMAO is one of them. How did that one come about?
Yeah, so there's evidence, again, through Esselstyn's diet and all the diets we talked about, the fact that the microbiome in the gut is a potential source of dishealth or lack of wellness. So investigators looked into different markers that would suggest abnormal health. And, you know, at Cleveland Heart Lab, what we've done is develop a series of tests that define not only whether a given patient is at risk, but where they exist on a spectrum of risk. So we'll go from a general marker of oxidation, which is a lifestyle risk marker of F2 isoprostate, which if abnormal, is really too much meat, diabetes, not enough exercise, smoking, but really a lifestyle problem. Out to then evidence of abnormal biology being an oxidized LDL. If your oxidized LDL is up, you know, we talk about patients who are overweight but fit. If they're overweight but fit, their ox LDLs are low and their risk of developing metabolic syndrome in the next 4 to 5 years is pretty low versus being overweight and not fit, your ox LDL is high. And what you can tell that patient is they're going to become insulin resistant in a matter of 3 to 5 years and at risk.
Let's say a patient has these tests, they see some elevations. Yep. And then they decide they're going to really be diligent and make the changes in their diet. Usually I recommend repeating the test in 3 months. Is that enough time to reverse these abnormalities?
Yeah, and that's exactly the point. So as we go through these markers of abnormal physiology and inflammation and risk, markers like TMAO tell us, well, maybe is the gut part of driving this vascular inflammation? If your TMAO is normal, then you can eliminate the gut. Some physicians will send patients to the dentist and they'll find out they have gingivitis or an unknown abscess. And a lot of physicians will then test, for fasting insulin levels or a 2-hour, oral glucose tolerance test. And what they'll recognize is, you know, the hemoglobin A1C is 5.96, not quite diabetic. But the reality is if you treat them with insulin sensitizers like Januvia or metformin or something of that nature, suddenly their vascular inflammation comes down. So it's once the markers are abnormal, the real question ultimately is what's driving that abnormality. And again, as we discussed, it's not about inhibiting myeloperoxidase. It's about restoring vascular health. And to your point, we didn't get there overnight. So it takes time for these markers to reverse, but 3 months is a reasonable.
Now, I just want to highlight now that you've drawn a connection between gut health and atherosclerosis, which is probably some, that's new information. A lot of attention is being addressed toward the microbiome these days from a neurological standpoint, but now we're seeing the heart also is affected. Mm-hmm. But you also mentioned, or you implied that don't eat meat because that raises these inflammatory markers. Haven't you tested people that do eat meat and had normal inflammatory markers?
Yeah, so it's all about moderation, right? There are patients, who can eat meat, but not too much meat. There are patients who don't tolerate much meat at all, and there are patients who can tolerate quite a bit of meat in their diet. Part of it is, you know, these extreme athletes have to have meat and they have to have the protein loads. Whereas, you know, if your exercise is the remote control, you probably shouldn't be eating that much meat.
Now, okay, that's one way of looking at it. In other words, not one size doesn't fit all, but what about having the right bacteria in your gut? Wouldn't that also play a role here as well.
Right. So the TMEO test, when patients have abnormal inflammatory markers, allows us to investigate whether the gut is part of the problem or not.
So you could then focus on improving gut health and probably also help lower inflammatory markers.
Exactly. Versus the dentist, versus the insulin. Mm-hmm. It's another piece of the puzzle, not the end-all be-all, but another piece of the puzzle in trying to lower vascular inflammation.
So having elevated cholesterol levels is also just a little piece of the puzzle.
Absolutely.
In fact, it's probably just a symptom of the problem, not the cause of the problem.
Yeah, again, it's about the injury. It's about mm-hmm. the first leg of Dr. Ross's hypothesis, but it's not about the response that ultimately drives the disease.
Okay. Now, I don't know if we're finished talking about TMAO, but there are some other tests. You mentioned the LPPLA2, which is another interesting test.
Right. So LPPLA2 and myeloperoxidase both look for what we call vulnerable plaque. Back to the earlier reference, it's kind of vulnerable plaque is kind of that inflamed pimple on the face, but it's on the inside of your artery wall. If you have that.
Not a pretty picture.
Not a pretty picture at all, unfortunately. So, if you have those in your artery tree, that is what ultimately causes the heart attack. When that ruptures, again, in the younger patient, you grow more hardening of the artery. In an older patient, you actually cause a clot to form. That clot is what causes the heart attack.
So when you're seeing a patient and you see an elevated LPPLA2 or myeloperoxidase, what recommendations would you give that patient?
Well, so if they're statin naive, I would put them on statin. If they're not known to be diabetic, I would do a two-hour glucose or something that lets a fasting insulin level, something to find out if they're pre-diabetic, which is, unfortunately, in this day and age, the most common cause. If they haven't been to the dentist in a couple years, I'd send them to the dentist. I would look for everything and anything that could drive vascular inflammation, because what I know is in that patient, I have not mitigated all the risk.
So what you want to do is stabilize the plaque.
Exactly.
Make it less likely to rupture. What about things like vitamin E or fish oil or vitamin C?
What I started to think about when you were mentioning a statin drug in my realm, a lot of the people who possibly might have a negative response to statin choose to go to red yeast rice. That's a possible option. Things like natokinase. You're mentioning the fish oil and the vitamin E. I'd kind of go also. I've been to some really interesting seminars talking about aged garlic extract and found that to be not only anti-inflammatory, but supportive of circulation.
Well, and that's why these tests are so important. They empower the patient to try different things. I have to tell you, a lot of our listeners aren't fans of statin drugs. So,
no, I
recognize
that.
Why might that be, Dr. Slavin?
But now they can try other approaches and be retested and at least get the information as to whether it's working or not. That's what's important.
Okay, so here at Advanced Medical Testing Centers, you can find the tests that will give you the information if what approach you're following is creating the results you're looking for. That music means it's time for us to take a break here on Natural Doc Radio. Stay tuned, more to come. Current medical treatment addresses problems and symptoms when your ship of health has gone aground, hit the shoals of disease, so to speak. Now, advanced medical testing helps to guide you through the stormy seas of disease. The information from high-tech lab tests such as Doctor's Data, Spectracell, Cleveland Heart Lab, Access, Health Diagnostics Laboratory, and Genova. These advanced tests assist you and your doctor to navigate the treacherous waters of disease development. Call 754-216-2332 to find out more, or visit amtcenters.com.
Are you in search of the fountain of youth, trying to figure out how to stay young and healthy? There are three main factors that will determine how well you age. The good news is you can take control of all of them and dramatically slow down your aging process. Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor, offers remote counseling sessions. She'll work with you to help you manage these three areas to stay young, vibrant, and healthy. She'll help you maintain optimal health that will have you looking and feeling young again. Sessions are offered via telephone, Skype, or email. Sessions are 30 minutes long, and she'll provide you with the in-depth knowledge and information you need to slow the aging process. Schedule your appointment today at janetcimarelli.com. Don't wait. Your clock is ticking.
And welcome back. You're tuned to Natural Doc Radio. Here we are talking with our very, very special guests, and we're giving you the kind of information that is available at Advanced Medical Testing Centers through Cleveland Heart Lab. Dr. Slavin?
Okay, and our guest is Dr. Mark Penn, Chief Medical Officer at the Cleveland Heart Lab, and I brought up vitamin E before the break, and he wanted to say something about that.
Yeah, so I got my PhD with a gentleman named Guy Chisholm, who back in the late 70s was the first, if not one of the first, to demonstrate that LDL becomes oxidized, and oxidized LDL is part of this early injury that we talked about in Dr. Ross's hypothesis. The laboratory in the early 80s demonstrated that vitamin E actually inhibited that oxidation, and that if you fed cells vitamin E, you inhibited the death of the cells. And so I joined Dr. Chisholm's lab in 84, was personally taking vitamin E in 85, put my parents on in 86, and so I often say put the dog on in 87. I was a huge believer and put a number of patients on vitamin E. And in 2004, I co-authored a study that demonstrated not only does vitamin E not work and vitamin A does not work, they're actually hazardous. So I think patients need to be careful, particularly with these two. I literally lived the whole cycle of demonstrating the benefit, and in fact won the Irving Page Award from the American Heart Association showing a link between vitamin E and thrombosis in 99. But, you know, vitamin E and vitamin A in particular really should be used in very low levels and not used in excess, because what we've learned in the ensuing decade and a half is that these antioxidant vitamins inhibit what we call metal-mediated oxidation, which is basically rusting. The good news is we as mammals don't rust. We have very specific enzyme systems that generate our oxidants, and things like statins and other things inhibit that oxidation. But in fact, these antioxidant vitamins don't.
Okay, so you're the one that said that.
Yep.
But what type of it's important to know, though, what type of vitamin
so
E
was alpha used? Tocopherol, wasn't gamma or delta.
There you go.
And there's some small chance
and you didn't have the tocotrienols either.
Yeah. But, you know, we just need to be a little bit more careful. And, you know, again, back in the day, late 90s, early 2000s, people were taking, you know, 1,000 milligrams of vitamin E. And again, I was personally taking this stuff. But it's important that we recognize the literature is pretty clear that these antioxidant vitamins, the challenge is they can pick up the electrons and move them. So it's not that they're just neutral. They could actually be harmful. So we just need to be a little bit more careful as far as how we dose these things.
Okay, so might we say in certain levels they can be helpful,
so 50 units,
overdoing it
it's not an
issue.
Exactly right.
Now, that's going to disappoint a lot of our listeners.
It's disappointing,
but,
Janet.
But again, this is where the testing comes in. You know, you can find out if you're supplementing, and you see your inflammatory markers go up, you've got the information now to make changes.
Okay, so I'm going to go into some controversial territory. Here are the statin drugs that, through the research, have been shown to significantly benefit those people at risk by reducing inflammation. And always when I'm talking to someone about using a medication, I talk about evaluating risk benefit. Mm-hmm. So in your opinion, the benefits with regard to all different types of statin drugs, all different name brands, so to speak, those benefits outweigh the risks?
For most of them, not all of them.
Okay.
Let me further define that question. At what point should you discontinue a statin drug given when you're giving it to someone?
So it depends on the risk benefit, right? If it's
liver enzymes go up,
I had a very nice patient many years ago who had a horrible heart and was on a transplant list, and he never got transplanted. You know, and lo and behold, here's a guy with a lot of coronary disease. Anyone needed to lower their cholesterol and avoid another heart attack, it was him. And he didn't tolerate it. And his liver, to your point, fell apart every time I put him on statins. And, you know, he ultimately succumbed to his heart failure and he passed away. But his risk.